Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everybody. And let others obsess on the horse race. We've got issues. And we conclude our election series, 30 issues in 30 days, with issue number 30, cars, bikes, and pedestrians. Can't we all get along? Now, we had long planned for this topic to be today, so we had no idea it would coincide with the emotional city council hearing yesterday that took testimony about 12-year-old Sammy Cohen Eckstein, killed by a van in Park Slope on October 8th. The bill in question would drop the speed limit to 20 miles per hour in some residential areas of the city. Sammy's mother, Amy, testifying yesterday, has become an advocate.
Our family has suffered an unspeakable loss. Every day is filled with pain so deep, we are not sure we can bear it.
Emotional transportation testimony policy from the personal loss of Amy Cohen. And now consider this. The NYPD had not ticketed a single car for speeding on Prospect Park West in the month of September or in the entire 76th and 78th precincts in Brooklyn in the month of September. So with that intense backdrop, we welcome Sam Schwartz, known as Gridlock Sam, and his Daily News column. He is a former deputy traffic commissioner for New York City. Gridlock Sam, welcome back to WNYC.
It's nice to be here, Brian.
Do you think, first of all, that the death of 12-year-old Sammy Cohen Eckstein raises policy issues for the city?
Yeah, it does. But I'm not sure that the city council has the right answer. I saw the testimony by DOT, and I believe we all want to see a reduction in traffic crashes, pedestrian casualties. The best way may not be to just lower the speed limit on every residential street. As you point out, they haven't written any tickets for people exceeding 30 miles an hour, and that's been happening. So you need better strategies to solve this problem.
You wrote a Daily News op-ed in September proposing how cars, bikes, and pedestrians could get along. And the biggest eye-opener for me in your piece, and here it is coming up in this tragedy in Brooklyn, was your background sentence that the city keeps all the revenue from parking tickets, but only half the revenue from speeding tickets and other moving violations stays in the city coffers. The rest goes to the state. Why is that?
Well, it's historically a state function. The regulation of motor vehicles, the city has some authority, but the state wasn't about to give up the revenue when it gave the city authority to promulgate traffic regulations. And the real mayor of the city is not the mayor. It's the Office of Management and Budget, and the Office of Management and Budget transcends mayors, and it decides which programs will always be supported. And so a program like parking enforcement will be supported. A program like writing moving violations to speeders will not. And that's why there's typically a 10-to-1 ratio in terms of parking tickets to moving violations.
So you're actually suggesting, and you don't think it's too cynical to suggest, that one reason so few speeding tickets are given out in the city versus so many parking tickets is exactly this lack of cash returns?
Absolutely. When I was a city official and I was in charge of traffic enforcement, which included some moving violations, I wrote about 25,000, or my staff wrote 25,000 moving violations, 6 million parking tickets. So you can, and that was the targets that we had from the Office of Management and Budget.
And what are you arguing, that it's important to public safety that this be changed?
Yes, I think it's very important, certainly when it comes to bike riders. Sending a bike rider to the Traffic Violations Bureau essentially means you'll never really have very much enforcement because there'll be no incentive for the police to do it. It's way down on their totem pole. However, if you make it returnable to the City Department of Finance and lower the penalties, you'll find that you'll generate more revenue, in fact, enough revenue to pay for itself.
And listeners, we certainly want to add you to this conversation as we broaden it out to the question of, can drivers, pedestrians, and bicyclists all get along in New York City? If so, how? 212-433-1220. WNYC. We've been getting a lot of tweets since we put this question out on Twitter this morning. You can go check that feed at Brian Lehrer. But you can also call 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for Gridlock Sam, Sam Schwartz. You read him in the Daily News, perhaps, a former deputy traffic commissioner of New York City, and he's the CEO of Sam Schwartz Engineering, which is a traffic planning and engineering firm. I know you've got a big picture plan for cars, bikes, and pedestrians sharing the road, and we'll get to it. But before we get too far from the city council hearing yesterday, at which Amy Cohen testified, it was about this proposal to establish a 20-mile-per-hour zone in certain residential areas. And I want to play a couple of clips. Here is Paul Steely White at the hearing from the group Transportation Alternatives, which advocates for alternatives to cars.
Death by traffic is still the leading cause of preventable death for children in New York City under 15.
Which is an incredible stat, that is still the leading cause of death for children under 15, or among the leading causes. And here is David Pollack from a group representing taxi medallion owners testifying against the idea.
The bill does not define with sufficient clarity what is a residential neighborhood. I mean, one could argue that all of Manhattan is a residential neighborhood.
On that point, one could argue that all of Manhattan is a residential neighborhood because there are buildings just about everywhere where people live. So what would be the definition of a residential area under the bill? Is it clear to you?
No, it's not clear to me because there are lots of streets, as Dave Pollack says, in Manhattan that are designated for residential. And there are many streets that are residential where a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit, A, would never be enforced, and B, that street has never had any crash or any pedestrian casualty, and C, it might be worse doing it in some cases. There have been studies that showed that artificially low speed limits result in a greater spread of speeds because the people that are going to speed continue to do so, and the people that obey the law are now traveling at 20 miles an hour difference in speeds, and your crash potential goes up. So I agreed with DOT's argument here that said, let's engineer this and look at their track record. They really have cut down pedestrian casualties dramatically. Let's zero in on where they're happening and let's adopt the right procedures for that.
They have done pretty well in the Bloomberg administration on this, right?
Absolutely. I mean, they're down to, I think, about 150, 160 pedestrian casualties. Too much. But I think their tactic will get that down under 100 and hopefully get as close to what Bill de Blasio said, zero pedestrian casualties.
And what was the peak? Do you know?
Yeah, the peak post-World War II was really the peak. We had more than 1,000 people being killed on our roads, about 1,200, and about half of those were pedestrians. So at one time, we had four times as many pedestrians being killed on the city roads.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River, New York and New Jersey Public Radio with former Deputy Traffic Commissioner Sam Schwartz, Gridlock Sam. And you have a plan, turning to bicycles now, for the city to be tougher on them and more lenient at the same time, as you put it. What does that mean?
Okay, first of all, getting tougher means having real enforcement out there, dedicated enforcement. We don't have that right now. And by having the summonses returnable to the Department of Finance, the Office of Management and Budget will say, okay, we'll give you 20 people who are dedicated to bicycle enforcement, which includes both bike riders and cars that park in the bike lanes, and you'll have them out there every day. The second thing is, by doing that, I would also lower the summons. Brian, it's $270 if you run a red light in a bike. And I had one bike rider write to Gridlock Sam, and he ran three red lights, and the cop gave him a ticket for each one. The second violation is more than $500. The third was close to $1,000.
Wow.
He had $1,500 in penalties. So I would lower that to $50. I would also relax some of the rules on bike riding. Wrong-way cycling, absolutely no relaxation. Running red lights, I would relax when there are no pedestrians in the crosswalk and it's safe to make a right turn on red. I would absolutely allow that. We allow it for cars in every city but New York, and I agree New York is right not to do it for cars. And I would also look at other regulations that may make no sense.
You even say bicyclists should be able to go straight on red in some cases.
Yes, in some cases. They're out in Mill Basin, and there is no traffic in any direction. Let them go straight through on red. They have to stop, and I see no difficulty in doing that.
All right, listeners, cars, pedestrians, bicycles, can they all get along? 212-433-WNYC. Let's hear what some of you have to say. Nicholas on the Lower East Side, you're on WNYC. Hello, Nicholas.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I happen to be someone who drives an automobile. I ride a motorcycle on a regular basis. I've been riding a bicycle in New York City for 13 years. I've been doing that longer than anything else. And I also use a skateboard pretty regularly to get around my neighborhood. And I have a different perspective on moving around in the city, and really my question is going to be for a more even and consistent enforcement across the board for everybody who is getting around in this very crowded city, which is, you know, can we all figure out a way to, you know, get along together? And I feel like I really agree with Transportation Sam on, you know, the enforcements are really skewed. I've been pulled over on a bicycle for running a red light, and I've been given that fine of $270 and then tacked on another one for having one headphone in the ear. You know, all of these things that seem kind of arbitrary. And then I drive around in an automobile and I see cars doing things that are way more dangerous than a cyclist running a red light on Flushing Avenue on their way to the Manhattan Bridge where the cops just sit there and wait. It's crazy.
And this, Nicholas, thanks for all that. I'm going to get a response for you from Sam Schwartz. And it sounds like, from what he says, from what I've been reading, from what you've been saying, like these same police officers who aren't giving out speeding tickets to cars, moving violations, maybe because the state gets half the money from them, that they are getting more aggressive in giving moving violation tickets to bicyclists.
Yeah, I think they're getting aggressive based on the number of complaints that they get. And that's no way to run a city. Let's have a program, and as Nicholas says, let's make it uniform enforcement so that we have very strong enforcement against cars. One of the best enforcement tools is automated speed cameras, automated red light cameras. They're agnostic. I mean, they will get you if you violate the rules, and you'll pay.
And looking at our Twitter feed, people are very divided on what the rules should be for bicyclists. Elwood tweeted, have the council pass a law that makes bikes the same as cars in regards to traffic laws, obeying lights and signs, etc. Jimmy tweeted, add more bike lane-specific traffic lights. Too often I've seen bicyclists sail through red traffic lights at danger to pedestrians. On the other hand, Jake tweeted, one rule, bikers can treat all red lights like stop signs.
Well, there's validity to all of those different points. And I lean more towards the red light being closer to a stop sign outside the Central Business District, outside Midtown Manhattan, where there are continuous pedestrians. And I'd really like the bike riders to stop at those intersections.
Cassius in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Cassius.
Hey, Brian. I'm a yellow cabbie currently, and I also ride a bike every day here in this city. So I see it, these things from all sorts of different perspectives. I'm really sick of hearing the story of the child, you know, dying. I mean, of course, I feel bad for the family and the child, but no one's explaining what the details are. I mean, 30 miles an hour is very slow. Nobody. Even the cops, nobody goes 30 miles an hour in this city. It's a ridiculous notion that they're going to drop it to 20. I mean, 30 is incredibly slow. We're not hearing in the story, like, what was the child doing? You know, it's implied that just all the drivers around Prospect Park are just driving like complete maniacs when they aren't. There's a failure in the journalism lately in regarding that story. I mean, and it's silly to think of when even all the cops are not driving 30 miles an hour that we're going to somehow get it reduced even lower. I mean, 30 is very slow. 20, you're barely moving.
Cassius, thank you. And I don't actually know what the child was doing. Was Somebody told me the child was running into the street for a ball, but I don't actually know. I don't know if the driver was speeding. Was there a charge filed against the driver in that case? Do you happen to know?
I believe there wasn't a charge filed, but I don't know enough details on it. But, Cassius brings up a point. He said, I don't know if they're speeding on Prospect Park West. And, in fact, what the DOT did there by squeezing the lanes, whether you agree with the bike lane or not, squeezing the lanes lowered the speeds and also reduced the separation in speeds or the range of speeds. So Prospect Park West is a safer street, and the speeds have been lowered, but not by putting up a sign.
So that's one of the things that bike lanes are supposed to accomplish as a matter of intent by the city, what they call traffic calming, right? So
yes.
Just by the fact that there is a bike lane, which in some cases like this means one less lane of traffic mm-hmm. for cars are going to go slower on average.
Yes, and they're doing it throughout the city. You may have noticed it is Houston Street, which is just a couple of blocks from the studio. They've reduced that by one lane. The traffic speeds have come down a bit on Houston Street. They probably could have gone for two lanes there. But wherever you have a bike lane, physically separated bike lane, you have several different things. You increase the density of traffic, which slows the traffic. And the second thing is the pedestrian crossing distance is reduced. And you also get the bikes out of the stream of traffic. So for the most part, most of these bike lanes have really worked very well.
You cite a statistic, and Cassius, thank you for your call. Keep calling us. That would probably – and we're going to try to get that detail right now and put it on the air because you raise a legitimate point. For all the attention to the death of this child, horrible as it is, was anybody at fault? Was it an avoidable accident or just an accident? And we're going to try to put that detail on to the extent that we can. You cite a statistic that would probably surprise many people and does not match where the public anger is these days. And that is that about 150 pedestrians, you cited this number, 150 pedestrians killed by cars in the city each year, fewer than one a year killed by being hit by a bike. Do you think pedestrians are too inflamed about rogue bike riders? Because I think despite the stats, there's a feeling out there that's palpable on the part of pedestrians that car behavior is fairly predictable and bike behavior isn't.
Yes, I think in terms of the pedestrian, a pedestrian during the course of the day will see almost every car stop at a red light. A pedestrian will almost never see a car going the wrong direction. However, you go to a Midtown intersection, as I did, and with Gerard Sophie, and we counted 75% of the bike riders who faced a red light went through the red light. Now, that's the experience that the pedestrian sees. The pedestrian is now crossing, and also the pedestrian is now has to look both ways to cross a bike lane because we have loads of bikes that are coming the wrong way. And that really inflames them, plus a car, you don't see the driver. Here you see the bike rider. You make eye contact. And I think there's something about that that makes people angrier than when a car causes a violation.
And you did do an informal survey one day. What street were you looking at?
We were looking at First Avenue in the 40s.
To see cars and bicyclists and pedestrians and who was following the rules and who wasn't. And you found?
Everybody wasn't following the rules, but to a large extent, what the average pedestrian would see is the cars were following the rules. And I've heard from a lot of bike rider friends that they said you didn't notice that the cars were tailgating, they were driving recklessly. But that's not what a pedestrian usually sees. And I was trying to explain the anger of the pedestrians towards the cyclists. And it's that wrong way riding, and it's that running the red lights.
Here is some information from our Transportation Nation blog about the Sammy Cohen-Eckstein accident. He was crossing Prospect Park West at 3rd Street on October 8th around 5 p.m. As best we understand it, quoting from his mother, Amy Cohen, at the City Council Transportation Committee hearing, as best we understand it, he crossed into the intersection from Prospect Park West with the light in his favor to get a soccer ball. While he had the light when he entered the intersection, it quickly changed and he slipped and was hit by a van approaching the intersection at full speed. Now, I think full speed there, from what my producer told me, refers to the full legal speed limit. which raises the issue that the caller Cassius, who drives a cab, was raising. Is full speed too fast around Prospect Park? Is 30 miles an hour too fast? Is 20 miles an hour too slow? How do we come to the right number?
Okay, it's difficult. First of all, just arbitrarily putting up a sign is not going to accomplish what you want. I believe 20, 25 miles an hour on truly residential streets approaching a school is appropriate. But I also think that we have commerce. We have to move people around the city. And 25 to 30 miles an hour is usually a safe speed in the city of New York.
Let's take another call. Listeners, can we all get along? Bikes, pedestrians, cars, 212-433-WNYC. Donovan in Jackson Heights, you're on WNYC. Hello, Donovan.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
Okay.
So I teach city planning, actually, to college students. And mm-hmm. one of the things I talk – I'm not a transportation engineer like Sam, but one of the things I tell my students is there are three E's to issues like this. There's engineering, there's education – and there's enforcement. And I think, at least in Queens, at least in Jackson Heights, where we've had three children killed by cars in this area in just the last few weeks, the problem is all of those things. It's engineering, it's education, and it's enforcement. The NYPD does not enforce aggressive driving, speeding. But I think the other problem that's not really been pointed out by anyone, here today, is it's not the speeding between blocks that's as big of an issue. It's what happens at the intersection. What happens at the intersections in Jackson Heights, and I think citywide I've seen it as well, is people taking these turns at almost full speed. And so they're not able to yield to the pedestrian on the street that they're turning onto. It's just not possible. They're taking these turns at speeds that are way outsized for what I was taught in driver's ed a long time ago when you're making a left turn or a right turn. And I mean, my son and I were just almost hit 3 or 4 days ago by a driver doing exactly that.
So you're advocating what? Education?
Education, absolutely. Engineering, the DOT has done a great job, but they need to do it more. But it has to be enforcement. I was at a forum just a couple of weeks ago held by our state assembly person. And the NYPD precinct here in Jackson Heights was touting the number of tickets they write. And it's laughable. You could write that many tickets in an hour at any intersection in Jackson Heights. And it's coming from the top. They're not being told that this is a priority. And people, 20 years ago when Giuliani came into office, people were afraid of being mugged when they walked down the street. Now people are afraid of being killed crossing the street.
Donovan, I'm going to leave it there and get a reaction from Sam Schwartz. What more can be done as a matter of engineering? He's talking about a technical fix, as well as by policy. And I see that what you proposed in your Daily News op-ed in September to do with the extra revenue from more tickets to bicyclists is to use it for public education.
Yes, I think public education is really important, and especially for pedestrians, understanding the dynamics of a truck. And we've had so many truck turn fatalities, most often children and small people that the truck cannot see. But this is one that the police really can observe and enforce and is not as difficult as speeding violations. But like they made blocking an intersection the equivalent of a parking violation, if they did that for fail to yield to in a crosswalk, you would see police officers and traffic agents dedicated to this enforcement. I'd love to see it. I hate when cars don't yield to pedestrians.
Are you optimistic, as we're just about out of time? It seems to be getting worse. I mean, people are more inflamed at this moment, I think, probably, the inadvertent result of the bike lanes and some people not liking how the bike lanes were put in and just the visible presence of more bikes on the streets and the unpredictability of the way they move at the same time that there is more focus on, some of the traffic deaths that are caused by cars. And so it's a little bit of a war of all against all at this moment. Is that how you see it? And can we have peace on the streets?
I'm more optimistic. First of all, we've really seen the number of traffic crashes go down dramatically, and that's a plus. De Blasio has said he would like to achieve 6% commuting by bike. That's about a 7 or 8-fold increase in the number of bikes. So we really have to get a handle on it. Can we get the biking community to begin to self-enforce to some extent? Can we change some of these rules to make it more of a Department of Finance issue, easier to write? And can we get a handle on the number of cars that are violating? And I think the same principles that I said for bikes should apply to cars. So, yes, I'm optimistic.
Sam Schwartz, CEO of Schwartz Engineering, a traffic and engineering firm, and Gridlock Sam in the Daily News, a former Deputy New York City Traffic Commissioner. Did there used to be a traffic commissioner? We don't have a traffic commissioner.
Actually, I was once traffic commissioner, but that was over 30 years ago. They had that title, but they don't have that title
today.
Do we
need a traffic commissioner again?
Yeah, I think we do. I think we need someone who really is concerned about the drivers. When you go out to boroughs outside Manhattan, that is a major form of transportation. And even in Manhattan, it is a major form of transportation.
We have a transportation commissioner. That's not good enough?
No, because I think the focus has not been on moving people in cars and trucks and taxi cabs.
Sam Schwartz, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And that's our 30 Issues in 30 Days election series for this year. On Monday, we will devote most of our show on the day before the election to the referendum questions on Tuesday's ballots, including casino gambling in New York and a minimum wage hike in New Jersey indexed to inflation. And also, should there be a mandatory retirement age of 70 for judges in New York? And there are others, too. So Monday, we'll devote most of our show to the referendum questions that U.S. citizens will get to vote yes or no on Tuesday's ballot. So join us for that. And coming up next, NPR's David Folkenflik on the Rupert Murdoch empire, including the Wall Street Journal and the New York Post, as they fight for the empire's reputation in a British court. Stay with us.